I think that Donald Trump thinks it would be better if he's president. I do not think so. Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States. And that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
Bernie and I agree on a lot of things, but I think I would make a better president than Bernie.
You think the last 4 years has been chaotic, divisive, toxic, exhausting? Imagine spending the better part of 2020 with Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump.
Bernie Sanders' analysis is right. The difference is I don't like his solutions.
Bernie voted 5 times against the Brady Bill.
I am not looking forward to a scenario where it comes down to Donald Trump with his nostalgia for the social order of the 1950s and Bernie Sanders with a nostalgia for the revolutionary politics of the 1960s. This is not about what coups were happening in the 1970s or 80s. This is about the future.
I'm hearing my name mentioned a little bit tonight. I wonder why.
Mark McKinnon joins us right now on the Rokan Show. He was at the debate site last night in South Carolina watching all these goofs. What did you make of it?
I thought it was chaotic, divisive, and toxic.
That's exactly what it was.
Something else, but that's how I described it. It was a mess. I mean, it was really a mess. It was not well gaveled, really, by CBS, and it just got out of control, particularly in the first half. And you know, it just, I don't, you know, I can make cases where, you know, people had good moments, and, you know, but there was nothing very decisive coming out of the debate. But my net takeaway is that it may have stalled Bernie a bit. I mean, everybody was piling on him, and, there is a sense in South Carolina right now that and Biden had an okay night, and I think he's regained some momentum. Got an important endorsement today, and there's some good polling out for him. So, you know, this could be a comeback kid story for Biden, possibly. Maybe the firewall holds up, and Bernie may have gotten nicked a little bit here. But then, you know, you come out all that to Super Tuesday, and, you know, Bernie has significant resources in big states, and it's just hard to see everybody catches him. On the other hand, you could say that, you know, part of the problem for Biden is Bloomberg, because even though he had a better debate night than the last one, which isn't saying much, but he's probably going to spend a lot of money, and that hurts Biden. And both that go to Bloomberg are coming out of Biden. So it gives Bernie a pretty good run to Milwaukee, although you could argue that you could see a scenario where somebody like Biden and Bloomberg split up a bunch of delegates and maybe get there and cut a deal.
Well, I will say this about Mark McKinnon. Is that I saw you all weekend long, late last week, weekend long into the beginning of this week, on all these other TV stations, all these other TV networks talking about this, and you had the quote of the week, which is, you know, Bernie's now the odds-on favorite. That's all I could see was a guy in a cowboy hat consistently saying, Bernie's the odds-on favorite. And I'm not 100% sure I agreed with that, because I don't think he's going to do as well in South Carolina. And there may be a little bit of the bloom off the rose, because when you see everybody else on the stage turning on him, including Elizabeth Warren, whose policies may actually be even more draconian than his. And then, of course, you know, he stepped on his own situation when he did the whole Fidel Castro thing. I mean, that is a ridiculous deal. And you know what's really interesting about Pete Buttigieg, Mark McKinnon, is that Pete Buttigieg is almost like the narrator in this.
He's, that's a good point.
Right? Yeah. Like he keeps refreshing us.
He's like the moderator in there, kind of turning everybody's cool head and never loses his cool. He's so good.
Yeah, he's a great communicator. Yeah, and he just turns around.
He really is. And he jumps into the conversation without yelling like everybody else does. I don't know how he does that, but he's just so effective at it.
Now, Biden, it was fascinating to watch Biden, because Biden, by not dropping dead during the debate, actually had a good night, right? Because every time they give Biden the microphone, you go like, oh no, anything can happen, right?
Oh, I know. Like when he stopped himself mid and said, "Oh, I've run out of time. I'm going to stop myself." Like, Joe,
right? You don't. You know, he's done that a couple of times. I mean, you've had a number of in your world when you were in charge of these candidates, you were running these guys, and you were, you know, backstage with a clipboard and getting all animated. If your candidate ever censored himself and said, well, you know what, I'm going to just let everybody else talk. Isn't the whole idea of the debate, and especially the ball call?
You want to run out the clock.
Yeah.
You want to run out the clock. And obviously everybody else was doing that, and Joe was complaining about it. But you don't want to be complaining to the refs. That looks, that doesn't look strong, and this looks weak. But listen, I do think here on the ground, it feels like Biden does have a little bit of momentum, and it does feel like Bernie got some sticks in his spokes last night. And I think you're right. I think Biden, I think, is going to win South Carolina now. I don't know. A win is a win. A healthier margin will help. But, just announced that he's spending, quote, a six-figure buy in Super Tuesday. So that means, something north of $100,000, but not much more than that.
Right.
In all those Super Tuesday states. So Joe Biden's broke. And so, it's going to be tough to parlay whatever happens in South Carolina, very strong into South Carolina. But I do think that he'll keep marching on. So I think it's kind of, I think Bernie will come out strong, and Bloomberg and Biden will probably keep going, and maybe Buttigieg has got a little juice to keep going. It's going to be harder, I think, for Klobuchar and Warren, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do think that Klobuchar for sure. I was watching this debate last night with with Klobuchar people, and people who are in politics, and they like her, and they would be in charge of things that she would be doing here. And there was a lot of sense of like, oh man, no, it's they're all kind of looking at each other trying to decide which way they're going to go now. And right? Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happens in these campaigns. But what is interesting is that there are some really good people in some of these campaigns, not Tom Steyer's campaign, but some of these other campaigns. And and those people will be leaving those campaigns when Klobuchar closes shop or Elizabeth Warren closes shop, because Elizabeth Warren had one of the most awkward nights. She really went for a kill shot with Bloomberg last night, by saying that he had told one of his female employees who was complaining about being pregnant and working to say, well, just kill it. And she said that, and then the room turned on her in a way.
Yeah, it did. It just, she took the success that she had last week and then, tried to build on that, but just took it a bridge too far.
Right. And then he was able to immediately.
Right, the room turned on. Just they didn't think it was fair.
Yeah. And then it immediately made Bloomberg into a victim, which is the first and only time happened in his life.
Mike Bloomberg sympathetic. You've gone too far.
Right. And then when she stopped and said that, and he's like, of course, I never said that. And you believed him.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea what actually happened, but then she just went, down that road that won't pay the dividends at the end of the day. So.
Yeah, you can see she was just trying to do something that worked for her before, and it just didn't work this time.
Yeah.
She was just trying to do the same playbook on something that just was over the line. Yeah, so not particularly great for her. And she had some other moments. But like I said, it's just hard to see the pathway. But I love being in South Carolina. I got a lot of history here. I'm here with Jen Palmieri, who's in the back seat here. We both have. She's been on the D side. I've been on the R side. Well, this is where I say they cut the dogs off the chains.
That's true. That's really true. It is fascinating. I mean, this is part of the whole process. And I know people want to blow it up and change it for the years to come, and maybe they will. But at least people will talk about Iowa and South Carolina very specifically because they're such different experiences. And these are two relatively small states, but clearly totally different and have their own individual styles. I want to just ask you, put your political consultant cowboy hat on for just a second, Mark McKinnon, before I let you go. In just a few minutes, the president's going to step to the microphones and describe what the response is going to be from the government toward the coronavirus crisis.
Yeah.
What would you advise him?
Well, this will be fascinating because I have been feeling now for a while that maybe it's a black swan event that really becomes the greatest threat to the president, to Donald Trump's presidency. Some external event.
Yeah.
And I'm increasingly think that this could be it. It's obviously having a huge impact on the markets. There's a lot of signs that, you kind of equate it to the Ebola virus and how Obama handled that, which was very well. And you can just see some early cracks in the administrative armor in terms of of, you know, just people at the CDC and, you know, unstaffed agencies that are supposed to be dealing with this crisis. Now, I think I think that they're about 2 weeks late to doing whatever they're going to do tonight. I'm sure they're going to have a special task force and some heads will maybe not roll, but get punched a bit in terms of, you know, not having, you know, someone's going to get hired above them to run this thing. But it better be a smooth show because, you know, and they've said some very contradictory things over the last few days, as you know.
Right. And that's
a big problem.
On Twitter, he was this morning, he was not taking it particularly seriously, including misspelling Corona. So when you do that, I think in a moment like this, it's fun when he's doing it for political purposes or he's in even the Roger Stone stuff, which is hard to take, but he's doing it. That's one thing. That's why
I've had a concern about it. That's what I've had a concern about is that he's never really faced a true crisis, really.
Yeah. This thing is real.
And this is the first time where you not only as a president, you have to deal with it, you know, in a sober fashion, but you also have to be staffed right, all those things. By the way, I thought that was where Michael Bloomberg's best moment of the night was when he tackled this issue. And he's very good on this kind of thing, public health issues. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he's going up with a multi-million-dollar buy with ads on this issue. And so I think that this is a potential inflection point here.
Right, because this is not political. Everybody agrees they don't like the coronavirus. You could like Bernie, you could like Donald Trump, you could like, you know, whatever, and not like the others, but no one's for the coronavirus. So that's where you got to take it out of politics. All right, Mark McKinnon, we'll see you on the circus Sunday night on Showtime. Thank you, my friend.
I always love talking to you, Rob. Kick it.
Bye. All right. So we'll stand by right now. We'll start the news with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And then as soon as the president steps to the podium, we will take his remarks live right here. And stay tuned throughout all of that. And then we'll discuss on the other side.